Okay, it's 7 o'clock, so let's get started. Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for joining, for coming to learn, and a special thank you to Rav Shai Schechter Shlita for arranging this unbelievable program. Just looking at the list of speakers that I'm privileged to be among is really special. It's really outstanding, and I thank all of you for coming at 7 o'clock. I know that's not always the most convenient time during the evening. The series that we're going to be doing over the next several weeks, and I don't know how long this goes. I don't know how many weeks, but theoretically we could do it for a long, long, long time, is Rav Moshe Feinstein and his halachic adversaries. And tonight I just want to give sort of an introduction to the series in terms of what we're trying to accomplish through studying this topic, and a little bit of a background into who Rav Moshe was, not so much a biography, but who he was in terms of halacha and his impact on the halachic world. Rav Moshe Feinstein was just a little bit of a biography. He was born on Zayin Adar in Minsk, Belarus, or in Uzda, which is near Minsk, and was part of the Russian Empire. His father was Rav David Feinstein, and obviously he named his son Rav David Feinstein after his father. He's a descendant of the Vilna Gaon, a descendant of the Taisus Yamtov and the Shlach Kadosh and Rashi, and most of his learning early on was with his was in a yeshiva in Slutsk under Rav Pesach Pruskin, and that's who he quotes and assumes throughout his life. He calls him his Rebbe. That's so to the extent that Rav Moshe ever had a Rebbe, who was Rav Pesach Pruskin, was Rav Moshe's Rebbe. He also learned a lot with his brother. He had a brother of Mordechai that he learned together with and speaks very, very highly of, who died at a young age. Rav Moshe became this unbelievable gaon. He knew everything. He had absolute bekiyus in Kol HaTorah Kula. Rav Schechter told us once a Maisa that he was sitting near Rav Moshe at a chasana, and someone came over to Rav Moshe, a yeshiva bachur, came to ask a question, and for some reason Rav Moshe immediately responded, it's a prima gadim in whatever, and he told him the prima gadim. And for some reason Rav Moshe was under the impression that the fellow that was asking the question was not sincerely asking, but was trying to test if Rav Moshe knew the prima gadim. And he felt like he was being tested. So after the fellow left, Rav Moshe turned to whoever was sitting next to him and said, he thought he was going to chop me on an offen of prima gadim? Like, what was he thinking? Like, it was so foreign to him. Of course, who doesn't know prima gadim? Baal Peh. Now, if you ever open up the back of a Shulchan Aruch, those really, 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 really tiny letters that go on for pages and pages and pages, that's the prima gadim. Rav Moshe knew prima gadim Baal Peh. It was not a shaila. Absolute bekiyus in all Sifrei Halacha for sure. And he was universally recognized as the Posek Hadar, even in the Hasidish world, in every world of Judaism, and the Torah giants of his time recognized him as such. They say that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach would get a phone call from Rav Moshe, he would stand up and put on his hat. And it wasn't like they weren't on a Zoom call. They didn't even see each other. It was a phone call, and he would stand up and he would put on his hat. That was the kind of respect that he demanded. There were very few people, for example, that Rav Elyashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman held that one should recite the bracha Baruch Shechalak Mechachmaso Li Reyav. There's a bracha that one recites when they see a chacham muflag. So some people have a bit of a more liberal definition of who warrants such a bracha. There were many gedolim that were always terrified of people saying that bracha on them. They were choshish that there would be gorim a bracha levatala, that they're causing other people to say a bracha levatala. In fact, Rav Schechter told us that he used to say it on Rav Soloveitchik after the summer when Rav Soloveitchik would come for the first year. He would always say the bracha on Rav Soloveitchik. I mentioned that to Rav Meir Twersky Shlita once, and he said, there's no way my grandfather heard him say that. There's no way the Rav heard him say that, because the Rav would have been very upset if he would have heard him say the bracha B'Shem Malchus on him. But both Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Elyashiv said, who do you say the bracha Baruch Shechalak Mechachmas on Rav Moshe? You know, it would have to be someone like Rav Moshe to say the bracha. Like, he was the standard. He was the first, he was the person that you would refer to. When he was very young, he started to become recognized. It took a while till word got out, until his Torah started getting out. But once his tshuva started being released, and once they started being sent around the world, it became evident that this is a once in a generation kind of a posek, kind of a Talmud Chacham. In the introduction to the eighth volume of Igros Moshe, the family wrote a short biography, and they identify six tshuvos from the year Tofresh Tzadi Dalid and Tafresh Sadi Hey that are printed in Igros Moshe Yoredeya, Chelik Aleph Simin Sadi Ches to Simin Kuf Gimel, about a woman who's unable to have water enter her ear because of some sort of medical condition, going to the mikveh, and what she can do about going to the mikveh if she can't get any water in her ear. And Rav Yecheskel Abramsky, who was one of the great poskim of the generation, was the Rav in Slutsk at the time, and he disagreed with Rav Moshe. And they sent the tshuvas to Rav Chaim Ozer, and Rav Chaim Ozer was recognized as the Gadol Adar, and he was going to be Machria. So Rav Bramsky writes that he's sending these shuvas along because one of the Rabbanim in the neighboring cities disagreed with him and was matir the tevila by putting something in the ear. So they need to know what Rav Chaim Ozer has to say. Does Rav Chaim Ozer passing like Rav Yecheskel Abramsky, or does Rav Chaim Ozer passing like Rav Moshe? So Rav Chaim Ozer received the shuvas, and he told the Dayanim in his Beis Din that he received these shuvas from Slutsk. And he looked at them, and he says he also wrote a tshuva on this topic to be matir. The Gadol Ador, Reb Chaim Ozer, what they say about Reb Chaim Ozer is that, you know, they say all the, like, he was able to write with his right hand and left hand two different tshuvas at the same time. That can't possibly be true, but they don't say it about me and you. But, you know, these are the kinds of stories that they tell about Reb Chaim Ozer. So Reb Chaim Ozer said he wrote a tshuva on that topic also, and he thought lahatir like Reb Moshe. But he said, as they quote in the introduction to the 8th volume of Igros Moshe, v'chitshuvaso shel Rabbeinu hi bekama madregos amuka yoser v'charifa yoser mitshuvaso shelo. Rav Moshe did a much better job, Rav Chaim Ozer said. His tshuva was much better than his, and that became something that word spread amongst the Talmidei Chachamim in Vilna, that there are these two brothers learning Torah deep in Russia that are learning Torah as if it was Nitna Misinai, like Malachi Ashares, and that began his reputation, which really wasn't fully cemented as the Gadol Dor until after the passing of Rav Aaron Cutler and of course Rav Henkin. Prior to Rav Moshe, Rav Henkin Zichron Lebracha was the Pesach Gadol in America. Rav Aaron Cutler was known as the one of the great geniuses of his generation. In fact, Rav Nata Greenblatt told my brother once that when he was learning in MTJ, when Rav Aaron Cutler was still alive, and the Mashkiach came over to him one day, came over to Rav Nata, and he said, "You're learning very beautifully. It's time to go learn by Rav Aaron." Meaning, like, that was you've graduated Rav Moshe, now you got to go learn by Rav Aaron. And Rav Nata looked at the Mashkiach and he said, "And who says that Rav Aaron is any greater than Rav Moshe?" And he said, it was such a foreign concept that you could even question that anyone is as great as Rav Aaron. He said, the Mashkiach looked at me as if I just told him I'm in the Keva, meaning as if I just told him that, you know, something that's absolutely absurd. How can you question if Rav Moshe is... But once Rav Aaron passed away, Rav Moshe clearly took the mantle as the most widely recognized Gadol. His style of Psak is fascinating. He did not use a ton of Svarim. He did not use, all of the Sifrei HaAchronim. Certainly not in explaining his psak. And Neid Yehuda, Chassam Sefer, Rav Shlomo Kluger, you know, certain basic tshuvas of Achronim. But he did not, contrasted with Rav Vadya Yosef, it's not even, you can't even compare the styles. Rav Vadya shakes out every tshuva that was ever written by his next door neighbor, his upstairs neighbor, the guy down the block, his Talmud, anybody and everybody gets mentioned in Rav Vadya's tshuvas. Rav Moshe was very, very selective, and he developed a mahalich in the sugya. It wasn't that he was relying on other people's mahalchim in the sugya. He developed a mahalich, and very often it was a very novel mahalich in the sugya. But he had such confidence in his lamdus that he was willing to paskin based on his lamdus. He was so confident in his mahalich in the sugya that he thought that was correct lahalacha. He was also very strong in his opinions. Many of the later tshuvas that Rav Moshe wrote were responses. This often happens. There were responses to earlier tshuvas that he wrote where people questioned him, and he responded to those questions. You have that all the time. The Neid Yehuda has a whole second volume of tshuvas, Madura Tinyana, which the majority of the tshuvas are either written by his son or are a defense of his own tshuvas in Madura Kama. Rav Moshe, in all of the defenses, never really admits that he made a mistake. He never says, acknowledges that he made a mistake, and not because he was afraid to admit a mistake. It was because when he wrote a tshuva, he was absolutely confident that it was correct, and you're not going to chap him on a maramako, meaning you're not going to find a gemara Gemara that he forgot. He didn't. He never forgot Gemaras. There's one tshuva where he says he forgot a taisvus. He said, the person who told him, he said, for a moment, I must have momentarily forgotten that taisvus. Or there's one tshuva where he says, I may have misunderstood a tshuva in the Marsham. But in neither of those cases does it affect the halacha at all. So when you wrote a sefer, or you dealt with a halacha, in any time from the middle of the 20th century and on, ad hayom hazeh, if Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva about it, you cannot discuss that halacha without dealing with Rav Moshe. It's just impossible, meaning he was that important. So there became a whole cottage industry of other svarim, of Gedolei Yisrael, that would disagree with Rav Moshe. And very often, in a very normal style of psak, and a very, not in a disrespectful way, very often, you know, kachi darka shel Torah, that there are always going to be multiple opinions. So there was a whole series of Shaila Tshuva Svarim that were printed by a number of people around that generation, around Rav Moshe's age or a little bit younger, that are constantly arguing with Rav Moshe, or it feels that way. And the reason it feels that way is because they always have to deal with Rav Moshe. You can't just write a tshuva, you have to deal with what Rav Moshe said first. So like the tshuvas of the Debrecina Rav, or the tshuvas of the Tzitz Eliezer, you know, all of these, even the Kleisenberger, all of these tshuvas, you can't not deal, and Rav Vadya Yosef and many others, you have to deal with Rav Moshe. But then there were those svarim that were mamish dedicated just to Rav Moshe, meaning it wasn't just a posek writing his tshuvos, and whenever a topic that Rav Moshe spoke about came up, of course he has to deal with what Rav Moshe wrote. There were svarim that were actually designed to dafka argue on everything Rav Moshe said. That's an entirely different madriga. That's an entirely different level. There was a sefer that lives in infamy called Ma'ana Le'igros that was written by a Hasidish Yid who's a Rav in Jackson Heights, Queens, who knew a lot of Torah, but the sefer is, you can find it online. You read it, it makes you want to throw up a little bit. It's disgusting. The way he talks about Rav Moshe, like every line is just so awful, and the way he talks about the Gadol Adar, and the entire Ma'ana Le'igros, it's an answer to the Igros. Every tshuva is to take a tshuva from the Igros Moshe and say, and this is hevel, and this is shtus, and this is stupid, and this is wrong. And he just writes in such a terrible, terrible expression. One could argue that that's apikorsus, to speak about the Gadol Ador in that way. When preparing many of these shiurim, or at least thinking about preparing these shiurim, someone suggested I look through the Ma'ane Le'igros for ideas. I couldn't stomach even flipping through the pages of the Ma'ane Le'igros. It happens to be Rav Vadya Yosef quotes it 11 times, the Sefer Ma'ane Le'igros 11 times in his farm. But as I mentioned before, Rav Vadya Yosef quotes everybody. Rav Vadya would not allow it in the Beis Medrash of his yeshivas. He would not allow the Ma'ane Le'igros in the Beis Medrash of his yeshivas because it's such a chutzpah. And even when he does quote it, he says that although there's a valid point here and there, the way it was written was terrible. And in fact, the stipler in Orchas Rabbeinu Chelukei, page Kuf Samachay, it says that when they showed the stipler of the Ma'ana Le'igros, he said, get it away from me. He threw it out of his house. He didn't want to see it. Rav Moshe himself, fascinatingly, even though it was published during his lifetime, and it was published by the same publisher as Igros Moshe. In fact, if you look at the Ma'ana Le'igros, it looks just like an Igros Moshe, which may have been done purposely. Rav Moshe himself never addressed it. In the Sefer Rishumei Aaron, Rav Aaron Felder says that Rav Moshe said he only met the fellow once, and he said, I did him a favor. He asked me for a favor, so I did him a favor. He said, it must have been a really good favor, because he paid me back with a lot of Agmas Nefesh, not just a little Agmas Nefesh. So, but that was the only time he ever addressed the Ma'ana Le'igros. More recently, much more recently, another sefer was written to also point out the places in Igros Moshe where people strongly disagreed with Rav Moshe, or where there is what to question about Rav Moshe. However, this sefer is much, much more respectful and starts out with the premise that Rav Moshe was the Gadol Hador, the Posek Hador, and this is just trying to open up the mind to see that there are more opinions out there. I actually have the sefer right here. It just came yesterday in the mail, called Psicha Psichas HaIgros. It's called Psichas HaIgros. So a fascinating, fascinating sefer. He quotes everybody, meaning academic articles. He's quoting from tradition and from the RJJ journal. You know, he quotes like everything and everybody. Anytime anyone ever asks a kasha in Ramesha, he quotes it. How do I know he quotes just about anybody? Because I found he quotes me. He quotes me. So what does it mean that I argue in Ramesha? What a ridiculous idea! I don't argue in Ramesha. You ask a kasha on a Gemara. So you ask a kasha, Nigros Mesha. Not only does he quote me, it was an article I wrote 17 years ago. So 26-year-old me. So it's ridiculous. Argue on Ramesha, not argue on Ramesha. That they ask kashas, because that's the way you talk in learning, and that's the way you learn when you ask kashas in learning. He's very broad in the things that he quotes, and in the introduction he's extremely, extremely respectful to Ramesha. Although he does admit using the Ma'ane Ligros, he says he cleaned it up. He edited it. You know, whenever he quotes the Ma'ane Ligros, he cleans up the language and he takes away all of the offensive language. So what are we going to do? Are we trying to make another Psichas Igros, another Ma'ane Ligros? No, what we're trying to do is to learn a different sugya each week, to learn a different halachic topic each week, where Rav Moshe had some sort of chiddush in halacha, where Rav Moshe had a tshuva that everyone, took a step back and wow, Rav Moshe had something to say that maybe people weren't expecting, that maybe broke new ground in halacha. And each week what I'd like to do, the plan is to take a different posek from Rav Moshe's generation or afterwards, take a different posek who disagreed with that on that particular sugya, who disagreed with Rav Moshe on that particular sugya, to maybe give a little bit of a biographical sketch of that that posek, but to learn through the sugya how Rav Moshe learned it differently than that posek. And the point of the idea is twofold. First of all, just to learn the sugya, and it's a good shtick, a good way to it's a good hook to learning a sugya to say that we're studying Rav Moshe and his halachic adversaries, because the truth is any halachashir and any contemporary halachic topic could be called Rav Moshe Feinstein and his halachic adversaries, because you can't give a halachashir and not quote a Nigros Moshe. But we're going to be focused on a particular, and we're going to change the posek each week, meaning I it's not going to be Rav Moshe and Tzitz Eliezer on 20 different things. We're going to change the posek each week. Each week we're going to learn about somebody different, and it also is here to demonstrate, not just to learn the sugya, but to show how once the Igros Moshe was written, you couldn't write something on the topic without dealing with the Igros Moshe. And that's an unusual kavod for a sefer to assume. Even the great Sifrei HaAchronim generally do not have that. You could write things on halachic topics that even the even some of the Gedolei HaAchronim that Rav Shlomo Kluger wrote tshuvas on without necessarily quoting Rav Shlomo Kluger. But you cannot write something that Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva on, and any respectable piece without, if you miss an Igros Moshe on it, someone will definitely point it out to you and say, big mistake, you missed the Igros Moshe, and you'll say, how could I have missed that? Meaning you have to deal with Rav Moshe. So I just want to spend the rest of our time tonight going through a little bit about where Rav Moshe himself writes in his introduction to the Sefer Igros Moshe. And he says, he starts off his introduction to Igros Moshe just to try to explain why he feels he's allowed to paskin halachos. Meaning he assumes that when he publishes the Sefer, everyone is going to be bothered by the kasha, who does this guy think he is? That he could write tshuvas la'alacha and that people are going to listen. That's what Rav Moshe's anivus is stunning. That's what he assumes people's question is going to be, rather than maybe whoever hadn't heard of him yet at the time say, wow, who is this guy? This is unbelievable. Like, I remember the first time I ever heard Rav Asher Weiss. The first time he came to America giving shiurim, it was, I don't know, like 20 years ago or something, and it was one of the first times, and he came to Shari Tfila, and they asked me to introduce him. So, because the rabbi was away that Shabbos, they asked me to introduce him. So I never heard of him. The Minchas Ashers and Chumash hadn't come out yet, or they weren't certainly publicized. So I said, well, I don't know anything about it. They said, oh, he's a Hasidic Yid, a Kleisenberger Chassid, and he gives shiurim to anybody. He speaks to all segments of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so now I knew something about him. So I said, here's a Hasidic Yid who speaks to all segments of Klal Yisrael. And it was like the biggest bizayim. That was the whole introduction. And Rav Asher Weiss got up and he said, thank you to the introducer. And then he gave a shiir that just like blew the roof off the place. Everyone was just like, how did we not know about this person? Where has this person been hiding? This is that would have been the experience you'd expect when they opened up an Igros Moshe for the first time. If you had an Igros Moshe, the kasha people were asking is not, who does this guy think he is that he's going to pass an halachas? But Rav Moshe writes that there are many gedolei Torah that have the practice not to pass an halacha, that they don't pass things in halacha. And he says it's based on a Gemara and Sota on Daf Chaf Beis. The Gemara and Sota on Daf Chaf Beis tells us that a Talmud shelo higia lahora'a umora is a very terrible thing. That a Talmud who's not ready to paskin, and he paskins, that's a very terrible thing. So Rav Moshe says that in fact the Gemara over there says, "Ma'id chsiv." What does the pasuk mean in Mishlei Perek Zayin? Ki rabim chalalim ipila v'atzumim kol arugeha. Ki rabim chalalim ipila zet tamul chacham shelo higia lahora'a umora. That's what the pasuk refers to when it says rabim chalalim ipila, that it left many victims in its wake, that's people who shouldn't be paskening that are paskening. And Rabbi Kivega, Rabbi Moshe points out, Rabbi Kivega's response to that is, yeah, but you have to look at the rest of the Gemara. The atzumim kol arugeha. It's an equal tragedy when you have someone who's capable of paskening and shies away from paskening. And therefore, one who is capable of paskening, Allah has a responsibility to do so. And Rav Moshe says, Higia lo ra cannot be defined by some previous generation's measure of what Higia lo ra is. Higia lo ra has to be based in each and every generation. You can't say, oh, if I'm not like the Nadi Yehuda, if I'm not as great as the Nadi Yehuda, so then I can't pass. No, it has to be based in each and every generation. And he says the practice of many not to paskin is that we're not, you know, they say, well, I'm not Rabbi Kiva Eger. How can I paskin if I'm not Rabbi Kiva Eger? He says that's probably incorrect to look at things in that way, to think about things in that way. You're not Rabbi Kiva Eger, so no one told you to be Rabbi Kiva Eger. But are you someone who's a Gia Lo Ra'a based on the generation in which you're living? And he says, but I might be wrong sometimes. He says, you know, it's okay to be wrong sometimes, in the sense that we don't have to know how to paskin like HaKadosh Baruch Hu would paskin. We just have to give a coherent, informed opinion based on the sources that makes sense, based on the Torah as we have it. And that's the definition of emes as far as halacha is concerned. Meaning there's no objective emes that if Hashem paskins this way, then we have to do that. No, Hashem gave us a Torah, lo b'shamayim hi. He gave it to us to be able to learn and to interpret and to develop the sugya and to be able to paskin, and therefore we have to paskin based on our ability. And his raya, and that's emes, that is actually emes. And his raya is from a Gemara in Shabbos, Taf Kuf Lamed, that the Gemara tells us, Ir achas ha'iso b'eretz Yisrael, shayu osin k'Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Eliezer had a different opinion about Machshir Emila, we'll get to it soon in the Daf Yomi, about preparations for the Bris Mila that involve Chilul Shabbos, that you're allowed to do those things on Shabbos as well. Not just that Mila is Docha Shabbos, but that Machshir Emila are Docha Shabbos as well. And the Gemara says there was one city in Eretz Yisrael that followed Rabbi Eliezer Shita, V'Yumesim B'Zmanan, and people didn't die young in that city. People died in the right Zman. V'Lo Od, El Shepa Machas, Gozra Malchus Harishu, Gzeira Al Yisrael, Alamila val osir lo gazra. And one time there was a decree against the Jewish community that they couldn't practice bris mila, and that city was saved from that decree because they held to the mitzvah of mila properly. What do you mean they held to the mitzvah of mila properly? We don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. No, but that community was allowed to paskin like their mara da asra. It's not that there's one emes klape shemaya. We have to do what the rabbanim in each community, how they determine the halacha, what the poskim in each community determine the halacha to be. And that is why machlokas, even about dvarim chamurim, is really okay. I mean, you could have a machlokas about very, very serious matters, about issues that relate to Gilui Arayos, as maybe we'll get to in this series. We'll talk about some of the issues Rav Moshe dealt with to be Matir Mamzerim and Agunos. We're talking about the Eishas Ish, you're talking about Gilui Arayos, you're talking about very serious issues. How could there be Machlokas in such a thing? Somebody is being Matir Mamzer, somebody, so, and somebody's making a woman an Aguna necessarily. How could you do that? He says, no, that's okay. okay, as long as each side gives an informed and honest opinion. And he said, and that's why Sfardim and Ashkenazim, Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chaim, that we absolutely respect the Sfardic Derech of Psak, just as we would expect the Sfardim to respect the Ashkenazic Derech of Psak. It's Margalu Bepume, the Rav Avadia Yosef. Rav Avadia Yosef would always say, Achenu B'nei Ashkenaz, Hayotzim B'yad Ramah, that the Achenu B'nei Ashkenaz, the Ashkenazi Jews, who follow the opinion of the Ramah. Of course, it's a play on word, Yotzim B'yad Ramah, that we follow the Ramah, and we have every right to, just as Ashkenazim have every right to follow Maran Beit Yosef all the time. And Rav Meisher brings many rayas for this idea, and he says, maybe based on this idea, we could explain an unusual Gemara in Meseches Menachos Daf Chavtes. The Gemara over there tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up Lamarim to receive the Torah, he found that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yoshe V'Kosher K'sarim La'usios. He was tying crowns onto the letters, and he said, Ribono Shel Olam, Mi Ma'akev Al Yadcha? What do you need to do that for? Just give us the Torah. Yeah, the words are there already. Amar Lo Adam Echad Yesh Asa Liyos B'Sof Kamadoros V'Akiva Ben Yosef Shemo. Oh, there's going to be a Yid, his name is going to be Akiva Ben Yosef, and he's going to be Dorish Kolkotz V'Kol, Kolkotz V'Kotz Tilei Tilin Shel Alachos. He's going to know how to darshan piles and piles of halachos from each crown on top of the letters. So he said, Ribono Shel Olam, Hareuli, I'd like to see this fellow. So Hashem says, Chazor L'Acharecha. So he went and he sat eight rows in the back of Rabbi Kiva's classroom, because they used to sit in order of their chachma, so eight rows back means he wasn't the best bacher in the class, and he didn't know what they were talking about. And Toshesh Kocha, Moshe Rabbeinu felt very weak, because he couldn't keep up in the Rabbi Kiva's shiur. And then they got to a certain point, and the Talmidim said, Rebbe, Minayin lach, how do you know this to be true? And Rabbi Akiva responds, Halacha l'Moshe misinai. So Nisyash v'daito, so Moshe Rabbeinu was calm when he heard that they had to rely on Halacha l'Moshe misinai. So he came back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he said, Ribono Shlom, Yesh Adam Kazeva Atanos and Torah al Yadai? You have a person like this, you're giving the Torah through me, give it to him! So Amar Lo, Shtok, Kach Ola B'machshava Lefanai. That's how I thought to do, Hashem says. So he says, Ribono Shlom, Hariseni Taros Hareni Scharo, let me see the reward for this fellow. Amar Lo, Chazor L'Acharecha, turn around. So Chazor L'Acharev, Rosh Hashokim B'Sar Makulin, and he saw the horrible, horrific death that Rabbi Kiva died. And he said, Ribono Shel Olam, Zu Torah v'Zu Schara, Amrle Shto Kachal Machshav Lefanai. So Ramesh says, I have a couple of kashas. He says, first of all, why call them crowns? They're little lines on top of the letters, you know, Zainin on top of the letters. Why do you call them crowns? Also, what does Mi Ma'akev mean? Ribono Shel Olam, Mi Ma'akev Biyadcha. It can't mean what are they for, because the word Ma'akev doesn't mean what's it for. It doesn't mean purpose. So what does Mi Ma'akev mean? It can't mean why don't you write the messages that they contain explicitly, because that question was never really answered, right? Whatever the question was, Hashem must have given him an answer to the question. So Rav Meisher explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the letters themselves kings. They have crowns. Each letter is a king. What does it mean, a king? Totally independent. The letters of the Torah don't have to answer to anybody. As long as you properly interpret the letters of the Torah speaks for itself. And as long as you're honest to goodness, doing your best at interpreting based on a proper Masorah, interpreting what the Torah has to say, then the Torah itself is totally independent. Any halachic authority can interpret them, and if done honestly and carefully, b'kovod rosh, by definition is correct. Mi ma'akev means, why not leave it as just one truth? Why do you have to make the letters into kings? Make it one truth that Hashem is the only posek, and it's our job to figure out what Hashem says. Why do we have to make it that the Torah itself is a king? And the answer is that Rabbi Kiva and the other Chacham will be able lahagdil Torah lahadira. Look how much more dynamic the Torah is going to be when you're able to have a Rav Moshe Feinstein and a Kleisenberger Rebbe and a Chazon Ish and a Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and a Rav Eliashiv, and they're able to argue about things. And that's that. Look how much richer the Torah is for it. That's the answer to the question that Moshe Rabbeinu asks. So the Rav Meisher then goes on to say that, you know, it's whatever I'm doing is not really psak, because I'm going to explain the reason that I'm giving every psak. So if there's a flaw in my logic, you'll see it right there, and then you'll be able to argue. So you don't have to accept everything that I do. And then Rav Meisher continues in his introduction, and he says that he hopes that his sefer is going to be a great suchus for his father. He felt a lot of the mechabrei svarim think, often write about the zechus of their parents, and that speaks very much to the Jewish sense of Mesorah, the Jewish sense of tradition, of always looking back to where we came from and never thinking that that we're the ones that got us there. You know, as the expression goes, don't think you hit a triple if you were born on third base. You know, Rav Moshe says, I was born on third base, so if I hit a home run, then it's only because my father got me to this point. And then throughout the introduction of Igros Moshe, throughout the Sefer of Igros Moshe, you find a number of tshuvas, we'll close with this, where Rav Moshe's humility comes through, where someone gives him mussar and he thanks him, thank you for giving me mussar. You have a number of tshuvas where Rav Moshe's humility comes through, where he feels a need to defend himself, why he's allowed to argue on other poskim. So I look forward, Bez Hashem, over the next several weeks, learning together many of the most important issues that Rav Moshe Feinstein dealt with, and the other poskim of his generation and afterwards, who took issue with the Psak Halacha, but all with the greatest sense of respect and reverence for the person who was undoubtedly the Posek Hadar. So thank you very much for joining, and turn it over to Rabbi Rothwax now. Thank you very much.